Welcome to Passionate and Practical, the art of dreaming, doing, and serving. I'm your host, Lexi, and today I'm here with my friend, Rachel Moon. She is so incredible. She is a teacher in the inner city of Chattanooga, and she is so passionate about her students. She is so loving and just loves these kids so fiercely. This past fall, one of her students had a house fire, and there was multiple siblings, and they didn't have anywhere to go, and they ended up in a longer stay hotel, and Rachel set up a meal train for them and just poured out love onto them. And she is just that kind of teacher that looks at these kids not as just a student or a paycheck. She looks at them as though they are loved by God, and she is just being the hands and feet of Jesus in these schools, and I am so excited to have her on the show today. Rach, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. You're going to make me cry with an introduction like that.
Well, between the two of us, one of us might be crying because we're both pregnant, so Rach is having a baby boy, and I'm having a baby girl. It's funny because Rachel originally thought she was having a baby girl, and the ultrasound tech got it wrong. So a few weeks after she had her gender reveal party of everyone thinking she's having a girl, surprise, it's a boy. And her hubby is real pumped about that. He is like a man's man. Like
he's a man's man.
He has a beard. He is tall. He is like you. If you need a tree cut down, you're like, I'm calling Griffin. Like he's just like strong and burly, and he would be the sweetest girl dad, but I know he's pumped to have a little guy to hang around with. So, So Rach, tell us what you're passionate about.
So there's a couple things that in terms of passion really feel like they take over my soul. And one of them is absolutely teaching and learning. And I think for me, that started at a young age. My mom's a teacher, and I always enjoyed school. And so I think that using kind of that background and that having that base really feeds into my passion of loving these students through education, because education just isn't math and reading anymore. It's so much more than that, especially with these students who this is 8 hours of their day and you don't know what they're going to go home to. So I'm passionate about teaching these kids, loving these kids through education, through empowering them with this education. And I'm also passionate about baking bread. And I just thought I would throw that in there because with the stress of this job and these students, baking bread and carving up is a big release for me. And it's good and it's fun and it smells so good. But definitely teaching these kids and loving them through baking bread as well. They love it when I bring fresh bread into class.
Oh, that's so sweet. And I love just following along with Rach as she posts on Instagram and stuff, because she's always showing people videos of her garden too. And she bakes and she has a garden. And so all the things that I'm not, I live in like the downtown area. So I don't have a garden, even though urban gardening is a new thing. I haven't gotten into it yet, but I love watching you, what is it called? Homesteading? Like just being so domestic.
Yeah, that's the end goal is the homestead, but being able to like love people through food and love the Lord and his creation through doing food right. We find so much joy in.
That's awesome. So tell us kind of the genesis of how you got into teaching. What is your approach to leading a classroom and kind of how you got into education?
Right. So my mom is a teacher. And it's one of those cheesy things where it's like her mom was a sister and all her sisters are teachers. And so it definitely runs in our blood. She is a special education teacher. She teaches severe and profound students. So students with both medical and intellectual disabilities. And that's what I grew up with. So I grew up in the classroom. I grew up around students who I wouldn't necessarily see in the hallway if I didn't go out and look for them. And because of that, I always found, I think, comfort and joy in the classroom. I mean, every little girl, I think, plays teacher when they grow up. But it was really cool for me because I was like being able to play teacher in a real classroom with real people. And so I knew going into college that I wanted to be a teacher. I thought I would want to be a special ed teacher, and I have done some of that. And I may go back to that at some point in time, but I'm so happy teaching inner city right now, that I would never want to leave it. So I went to college in Florida. I got a double major in teaching. It was elementary and special ed, and then a double minor in youth ministry and religion as well. And I think partnering those two things together has really driven my practice of teaching. It's really just contributed to the culture of my classroom and the reason why I do this, even on the tough days. Being able to focus back on the ministry of teaching is really what keeps me grounded and keeps me being able to go with, you know, these kids who half the time don't even want to be there, or I don't want to be there. It's really easy to be like, we do this for the Lord because we love him and he loves everyone and he loves these kids. So I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep showing up with these kids. Mm-hmm. So that's been really helpful in this practice. Yeah.
I love that. I love that you brought up kind of obedience to God, because I think that sometimes we want to do the things that we're passionate about. And obviously God places those passions in our life. And if we are blessed enough, we get to call it our purpose, which is exactly mm-hmm. what you're doing, but it doesn't come without obedience. And mm-hmm. I love that you have just in that last couple minutes, just kind of displayed both things. Like, you have a deep love and desire to teach and a gift to teach, but you also know that sometimes when it gets hard, it is an act of obedience. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a beautiful picture of how God sees us living out our purpose. So thanks for sharing that. And mm-hmm. Something I love about you, Rach, is that you're just so open and authentic. And for me, when we first met and I found out you were teaching in the inner city, I was just so excited, because I also have a similar passion for kind of pouring into youth. And in this season of life, while I have my little one, I'm staying home with him. And so I kind of wanted to live vicariously through you. And so I'm like, anytime you just need to talk about like what you're going through. And I know it can be tough. And so if you just ever need someone to like talk to or cry with, like, just let me know. And one time you were like, hey, Lex, remember that time you told me that I could cry in front of you? And then you just started crying. And I just loved how real you were, and how so often people are like, yeah, yeah, you want to talk to me about what I do and the hard stuff, but we're so closed off. I think specifically, maybe not, but like, I think a lot of Americans, like, we feel like we have to do our career alone. We have to fight the good fight. We have to get the education. We have to have the good resume, but we're so afraid to show vulnerability. And so I love that about you, is that you're just so willing to let people in, to your heart and to your life. And I think that contributes to why you make such an amazing teacher. So tell us about your current classroom. What are some of your favorite things about the culture of the students that you teach?
I think, kind of going off what you said, in terms of this classroom, is these kids all, like, what I was talking to you about that day, I distinctly remember, was not an easy thing to experience as a teacher or for that kid to go through. And I think what ultimately builds the culture and climate of my classroom is that these kids are having to do things like that every single day. And so with this community that they live in East Chattanooga, family is everything to these kids. And there's no boundary as to what family is. Your family, if you are able to love and care and protect one another, you know? And it's funny, because like, the kids will be walking down the hallway and they're like, oh, Miss Moon, that's my cousin. I was like, and I have to clarify, I'm like, okay, is that your actual cousin, or is he your cousin, like your brother cousin? And they're like, oh no, yeah, he's just like my cousin. I'm like, okay. But I think that's so beautiful. And I think that's something that a lot of times we lack, unless we absolutely need it, is the ability to just love one another with no limits, as if we are blood. And so I think that really drives my classroom, because otherwise, you know, we're not going to be able to teach and learn and gain knowledge unless we can kind of put on the back burner the things that are happening before 8 a.m. and after 3 p.m. And so because of that, it is a very familial, is that the word?
Yeah.
Familial classroom where, look, I've got your back, you've got my back, And we're going to do this together. And the prime example of that actually is on Friday. So I teach fifth grade, and I have like three other people who teach fifth grade with me. But I am very fortunate in the fact that my classroom environment has been so caring and loving and protecting. I haven't had any fights break out in my classroom at all, whereas most other classrooms have had like six or seven fights. But I had my very first fight on Friday break out in my room. And it was one of my students who is like my everything, drives me up the wall. But I know the second that he gets promoted to sixth grade, I'm going to weep as if he were my own child. And it was just another student, and they've had a tiff. And basically what happened is they call it jugging. They jug at each other. And then it gets too serious and it turns into a real fight. So one person swung, another person tackled, and I was trying to break it up, and another teacher came in and helped me break it up. And I come back in after taking them to the office, and my kids are by the phone. I'm like, guys, what are you doing? They're like, Miss Moon, we're trying to get you some help in here. You shouldn't be doing that. You're pregnant. You can't be breaking up these fights. And it was just really cool, especially, I mean, I don't live in the same neighborhood as these kids. I don't have the same background, experience, stories as these kids. But since August, I've been able to show them that, like, together we're better. And for the fact to them, they're like, no, we got your back. Like, we're going to protect you when you've protected us, was just so, so cool. Mm. And I think that's just a really good example of what we try to establish in our classroom, because, you know, we have so much pressure on us from the district and our administration to get these test scores up, and why aren't our kids performing? And when you're able to put them in a safe and loving environment, that's when you're able to have growth in terms of academics. Because ultimately this classroom is so much more than just learning how to read and write. We're having to develop a full person on top of the things that they have to live through at the age of 10. So
totally. And that kind of love that you're showing your students is going to impact them for the rest of their lives, and they will remember. Do they call you Mrs. Moon or Miss Moon? What do they call you?
It's Miss Moon. Yeah.
Oh, sweet. Miss Moon.
My mother-in-law comes in and helps in the classroom every now and then, so she's Miss Moon as well. And so they've started calling her by her first name, but for a while they're like, no, we can't have two Miss Moons in here. There's only one.
Oh, that's funny. But the love that you were talking about just reminds me of this incredible TED Talk. I'm not sure if you've heard it, but it's a principal talking about, I think it's an inner city school in Philadelphia, if I'm not mistaken, and it was called Strawberry something high school. It's one of the most amazing TED Talks. It gets me crying every time, and I'll send it to you after this if I can't think of the name. But one of the things that she says as a principal is that she had to establish mutual respect, which is something that you've done so well. And one of her lines that when she made announcements every day was, if nobody told you they loved you today, I do, mm-hmm. and I always will. And, oh, it gets me teared up even mm-hmm. just talking about it, because these kids, like, just talk a little bit about, gosh, I didn't think I would just get so choked up by this. Sorry. They're your kids. Like, I don't even know their faces, mm-hmm. and you do. But these kids, some of them, like you said, like, they call their cousin family or they call their neighbor family, because chances are they came from a broken household where maybe mm-hmm. dad's not in the picture, or they're, you know, they live with grandma or they live with their auntie or whatever the case may be. So tell us a little bit about kind of some of the in generic ways, like mm-hmm. without getting too specific, tell us a little bit about some of your students and what are some of their life crisis that they're going through on a daily basis while trying to be educated, just to kind of give listeners a glimpse into their life. Because I think so often we can hear these stories of how bad kids are and we blame the kids mm-hmm. and we don't blame their community. And so, yeah, if you could just kind of clue us into some of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because I'm able to say these things now as if they're natural and normal, because to me they are right now in these kids' life. But I remember walking in the classroom the first day and learning about each one of these kids and being like, how in the world are they able to function in a classroom? But for instance, I've got this one student, lives with grandma. Grandma has full custody. He was in Child Protective Services for 3 years. Mom's addicted to crack. Well, mom got out of jail. She's back in the picture, also living with grandma. And this kid comes to school, and, you know, every single one of our kids are on free and reduced breakfast and lunch. So every single day he comes in, I give him a hug as he gets off the bus, goes to breakfast, and I have pillows in my classrooms that my kids use during independent reading time. And every day he just goes over there, grabs a pillow, and takes a nap for the first 30 minutes of class. And I've gotten to the point where, I, you know, I used to try to fight it and just keep that from happening because we need our instructional time and it's important. And but what I realized was, okay, well, mom was having parties and bringing home people and doing things in the room with this 10-year-old that he needed this 30 minutes of sleep in the morning, this 30 minutes of peace where he knew he could sleep in a safe environment. And he came back from Christmas break. The first day back from Christmas break, he slept for 8 hours straight. And I let him because I don't know when the last time he was able to sleep for 8 hours straight is. I've got another kid technically they say you're not supposed to have favorites, but reality is we all do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because my favorites are always the ones that drive me up the wall. And when they're out for the day, I'm like, thank goodness. Because the classroom's a little bit more peaceful and a little bit more controllable, but their hurt makes me love them so deeply.
Hmm.
And he is in the custody of his sister. His sister got him when he was 4 days old, the day after she graduated high school. And he is 10 now. She is 28. She has two kids of her own as well. And this sister fights for him in every single way. And if I am half the mother to my baby that this sister is to her brother, I know all my child will be loved so well.
Mm.
But, you know, there's six people living in this house and she's 28 and taking care of, you know, 5-6 kids, which is just unimaginable to me. I have two students right now who are homeless, drifting between hotels, shelters, and cars. I've got the family who their house burned down. They finally found a place that they've been in since, I want to say, they've been at about a month and a half now. So that it's been really cool to see the fruit of the labor of having my family and people I love and in my church and everyone pour into this family to see them get back on their feet. The majority of my students, I would say, either live with one parent or grandparents or uncles. And they usually, my friend used to live in the same neighborhood as these kids. And so I went to her house and most of them are 2-bedroom houses that are not well maintained, broken windows. There's no central heating and air. And there's usually on average about 4 to 9 people living in each house.
Hmm.
And the amount of love that in that house is amazing. It's ironic. The amount of love is amazing, but so is the amount of things that I was like, oh my gosh, you have this in your house. How in the world is this possible? I don't think this is legal. And it's interesting because what's hard for me to see as somebody who, you know, we've got a tight budget, we have our bills and then this in terms of the order we pay things in and the order we control our finances. I had 4 kids who didn't show up to school the very first 3 days of school, maybe. And when they finally came back, I was like, hey, it's so good to have you. Where were you? And they're like, oh, well, my mom didn't want me to come to school without the new Jordans.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. But then, so they have the new Jordans. They have the fresh weave and the fresh haircut and their edges look sharp and everything's good. But then their power got cut off because priorities were not the power. And I think it was last year, maybe it was last year, school, we couldn't go outside for recess for 3 months because there were gang wars going on outside. We have had gangs in our elementary school break out. And what's happening is it's men in the home who are basically like dads of these gangs. And so their kids don't know what they're doing, but they know their dad does this. So they're going to come to school and do the same thing with their friends.
Wow.
Which technically by law, at the age of 14, you can be in a gang. And from the age of 8 to 14, if you are in any way affiliated with a gang, it's called a clique. And from the age of 14, if you are in a clique, it goes on your permanent record. So if you are 14 years old and you get into a real gang, they already have proof or what they need to show that you were in a clique. So the gangs are real in third, fourth, and fifth grade. And it's a different home life, a different community life. And it's a lot to serve as the foundation for education, and to teach through that and over that. It's really cool, I think. And we've been trying really hard to get the community involved in school because those relationships have kind of been broken over the past years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a big school goal of ours this year, is to just open up the doors and welcome as many people as we can. And it's been really cool to see these parents want to get involved. And I've been so blessed that I have been able to establish good relationships with these parents and guardians. Because I've seen teachers who haven't, and how much of a struggle it is for them and their students in their classroom. But it's really cool when these parents truly do buy into what we're trying to do in the classroom. And it starts this building that relationship with them starts the same way as I built it with their kids, which is just fun to see.
That's awesome. And I think that and I don't know, I'm just assuming, but I'm guessing the teachers that have struggles with their students and the parents are more black and white people. They think there's wrong and there's right. And if my student is sleeping, then he's going to be in trouble. And all. And I just love that you have truly adopted their culture and just know, like, whatever my student needs above, like, because I know that if, like, my student's falling asleep, then he's not going to learn anyways. Mm-hmm. So might as well just let him get some rest in that's needed. And then we can start from there. And then he loves you because he's like, wow, she let me rest. And that's what I needed. So I love that you teach from a place of looking at their needs first and foremost, their basic needs of, are they fed? Are they, you know, have they slept? How is their emotional capacity? And then you teach from that place. I think it's really powerful, and I love your approach to education. And to kind of piggyback off the gang stuff, I learned a lot. We live in an urban neighborhood in Chattanooga, and we've built some relationships with some younger kids. And there was a 13-year-old that was raking our leaves and mowing our lawn, and it was really sweet. We had such a good relationship with him, and we learned a lot about his brother being kind of initiated into these gangs, and what he would say is blood in, blood out. And so you have to fight to get into the gang, and you have to basically bleed to get into the gang. But if you want out, you also have to bleed even worse to get out of the gang. And sometimes that means concussions. Sometimes that means they said he would use words like smash his face in. And that just meant that they basically would either stomp on someone's head on the pavement, or they would smash their face into the pavement. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's horrific, and it sounds horrific, but it is horrific. And these are our kids, the United States of America. We talk about, you know, so many issues going around globally. And I think that we can have a heart for both. I'm not one of those people that's like, it's in our backyard. Yes, it's in our backyard. It's everywhere. But what we sometimes turn our head to as Christians is we get so comfortable in our own lives that we forget to dive into the stories of others, because it's hard and because we don't want our kids to be exposed to it. And and then another relationship that we had, it was a bunch of neighbor kids that would just ride their bikes by and stuff, and we would hang out with them outside and talk to them. And their home was a duplex, and it was for sale. And when I had my real estate license, I had people that wanted to look at it. So I went into their side of the duplex, and there was bugs The bathroom was infested with bugs, and the kitchen was infested with bugs, and they were sleeping on the floor. And you just have no idea that these kids are basically being raised to survive, and they're not being raised to thrive in life. They're not, they're not given, you know, other than their escape, which can be school. And so their teacher really, I mean, I know you feel the weight of this, is the person that they can go to when it's tough at home. They're the person that they can confide in when, you know, mom hasn't come home in a couple nights or whatever the case may be. And so you have such a special, special job. So kind of turning towards a lighter, kind of exciting thing that you do, tell us about Friday, Future Friday that you do with the students.
Yeah, Future Fridays. So that started, I honestly don't even remember how it started, but I remember talking with a friend who also teaches at the school, and I was like, look, like, we just need to get these kids exposed to other things. And I think something that is hard to realize is that in order, doesn't matter how good the teacher is, but in order for us to give these kids the same opportunity that kids on, you know, Signal Mountain, which is where I live, have, it's going to take a lot more work. So like, we need these kids to be exposed to things. So Future Friday, basically at the beginning of the year, I had my students take a survey. What do you like to do? What do you want to be when you grow up? What are your passions? What makes you happy? What makes you sad? And basically based off that, I went around, connected with people, and tried to find people who look like them, people who talk like them, people who have stories and pasts like them, but have found not necessarily a way out of what they are in, but have found other options that these students might not be otherwise exposed to. So for instance, we've had a doctor come in, we've had a gang interventionist who is actually in a gang up in Detroit, has a bullet wounds and everything. We had a rapper come in. We've had construction workers, bankers, small business owners, college athletes, other teachers come in and just talk to these kids and let these kids answer questions and ask questions, and just to expose them to all these possibilities that are out there. And it's been really cool, A, for me to meet these people and to hear their stories, because looking at someone even in the business world or in the professional world, you have no idea what they came from. And so that gives me just such joy and like light at the end of the tunnel now to be able to look at my kids and say, I have no idea where you're going to go, but I know it can be great. You can achieve greatness. And it's been really cool for these people to be like, yes, let me in your classroom. Let me talk to these kids. And so we haven't brought them back for this second semester yet, but we had some really good ones in the first semester. And it's hard because these students, a lot of times, they don't know the possibilities. So when I ask them what they want to be, I want to be a rapper, I want to be a YouTuber, I want to be an NFL player. Okay, so those are great aspirations and those are great dreams, but let's keep thinking, let's have other ideas in mind, or how are you going to get there? And so to have like these college athletes and people who are construction workers or construction owners, and it's just really cool to get them to kind of open their mind to see all these possibilities. So
I love that. And I love, there's a quote that says, we can't become what we don't see. And that's exactly what you're experiencing with your students, is that they haven't seen much beyond what those few careers that they mentioned. And so the beauty of what you're doing is it's now opening their mind to, even if like you have a banker come in and they don't resonate with that, but then they're like, whoa, I didn't even know that was a possibility. And as an adult, I still feel like I'm learning that. I meet different people. I met someone a few months ago and she works for a company that makes like fun socks. And it was just like, whoa, that's in Chattanooga. That's so cool. And it was just such a unique, job, and it's such a unique career. And it's really, the possibilities are endless, but, exposing them to that is really key to, to that. And also, I love your perspective of saying, hey, this is, it's not only helpful for them, it's also helpful for you, because now you get to dream for them of what they could become, and you know that they can do something great. So a different question is, you're married, Griffin's awesome, and how has it been with him with your job? Like, how has he supported you? How has it been? How has there maybe been some tension? I know there's a movie, I don't remember what it's called, something about writers. It's a teaching movie, and it's phenomenal. And I just remember there being a really, really tough scene where she was so invested in her classroom that it was impacting her marriage. So, and not to kind of get too into it, but just how has that played out for you guys, and how has Griffin either like been super supportive, or how has it been difficult for you guys, and what are you willing to share?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. It's interesting because, like, I feel like if you ask a teacher who's not inner city, your answer is going to be totally different. But one thing you'll find in my answer, and in hopefully the majority of teachers' answers, is that because your spouse loves you, they're going to love what you do and love how you do it, especially when it comes to teaching. But I think with us, it's, you know, we got to go through college together, and we got to go through this youth ministry program together, which helped us build such a solid foundation for how we listen to one another, how we love one another, and just it helped us get our feet really planted for marriage. We just celebrated our 1-year anniversary last weekend.
Yay, happy anniversary. Yeah,
thank you. And so it was just, we went away for the weekend, and it was really nice to be away and to just sit back and reflect and dream about the future. But I love my husband dearly, and watching him love me as I love these kids has obviously made me fall in love with him over and over again every single day. Because I think, and one of the toughest parts about this job that he handles so well is that I can't separate the emotions. And I think with these kids, I shouldn't have to.
Right.
It's not a 9-to-5 job, because a lot of these kids do go home and kind of fight for a meal, fight for coming to school the next day. And I don't think I'm supposed to leave that in my classroom. I think that that wouldn't be good for my relationship with the kids or for my own health. But him just listening and not saying, I know, and saying, hey, that sucks. Like, that sucks. I can't imagine hearing that, watching that, witnessing that, him letting me, well, not letting me stay at school until after dark because it is a dangerous neighborhood. So he's very good about being like, okay, it's dark, or you're in your car, right? You're on your way home, right?
Aww, that's so sweet.
But being understanding about the fact that, hey, my school doors are unlocked at 6 a.m. I'm going to be there at 6 a.m. And I'm going to be there until dark. And knowing that I'm doing that out of a place of love for my kids. It's also been really cool recently. I coached soccer at school as well. Never played soccer a day in my life. More of like a hype man than more of a skill coach.
That's amazing.
But it's a lot of fun. But so he's been able to come to practices and come to games, and he's helped me take kids home, and we sponsor other soccer teams, and so making snacks for them. And we had a Christmas party, and he got to come in, decorate my room, decorate cookies with the kids. And so his willingness to be in there with me and love these kids for who they are, and for who I see them as, these tiny humans that, and these adults that they will become, I think has been helpful for him to see why I do what I do, why I get emotional, and why I do come home with all this baggage. And I know that I wouldn't be the teacher I am unless he helped me lay that at the feet of the Lord. Because me being the person I am, I would hold on to it. But being able to talk with him about it, cry to him about it, and him weep with me for these kids or have joy in the situation with me, makes it so much easier to go through this. And I think it's also interesting, this is kind of like a sidebar, but we both grew up in very traditional conservative homes. I grew up in a Southern Baptist church. My parents are very strong in their beliefs in terms of what the government's job is and how we should and should not benefit from the government. And his family is the same way. And it's been so amazing to love these kids and be at this school, and for us, him and myself collectively, to just watch our perspective shift. And to see a new side of not even politics and not government or anything like that, but just to see, I would say, a stronger biblical side of what
loving what your neighbor
really need. Yeah, loving, like, how to love your neighbor thoroughly and well, and through, like, in terms of what scripture says is right and true. And so that's been really cool to be able to grow like that together, and his willingness to grow like that and to have those hard conversations about, like, you know what, I don't know if I think this anymore. I don't know if I believe this anymore. And it's just helped us grow in this quick 1 year of marriage. And I'm so excited for how it's going to continue to shape. But he's definitely been a rock.
It's phenomenal. Yeah. He's such a sweet guy. And I could see how he would just be so supportive and so loving and encouraging. I have a similar, have had similar experiences with some of my, my preferences when it comes to how the Bible should be lived out. Mm-hmm. And then I meet someone who's on the other side of the way that I thought things should go. And then I hear their story. And I think that that's really the most powerful thing for me, is being humbled by hearing someone's story. And like, of course I was raised in, you know, white suburbia of Central Florida and never had to think about where my next meal was coming from. My parents are still married. They're just madly in love with each other after 25 plus years. And so for me, it really has been breaking walls down in myself. And I think that that's really where Jesus works, is that so often we think that our work for him is for him and for other people. But then we find that our hearts are constantly just turning and changing and being humbled, and just our, you know, our different preferences or our the way that we judge people, it just kind of starts to crumble. And I think that is so beautiful that that you express that. And it's really, it really, really powerful, because it shows that God's really is in work, is at work in you both in this area. And I think that that is going to spread to your community and to other people that live on the mountain and things like that. So I think that it's going to obviously make an impact past just your students. But kind of speaking of your students, what is maybe one of the most rewarding things that you've heard come out of the mouths of a student or a group of students? Or what do you, what's the kind of the resounding thing that you hear them say to you that's like, oh yeah, I'm doing my job well?
I think, so it's funny you brought up that podcast with the principal about saying that she loves her students and telling them, goes back to the community of, like, you don't, these, with these students and what their way that they're raised, if something happens, you don't talk about it. If you are feeling something other than strong, you don't show it. And so I, am emotional and vulnerable with my students. And I tell them every single day before they leave, as they walk out the door to go to the bus or car ride or whatever it is, I love you. I can't wait to see you tomorrow. And most of them will hug me. Some of them won't. That's fine. We're getting there. But a couple of them, you know, not even a couple, honestly, like probably about half of them, love you too, Miss Moon. See you tomorrow. Love you too, Miss Moon. See you tomorrow. And I don't think they understand for me what that means. You know, if they could just be saying, so I won't keep chasing them down the hallway, telling them that I love them, because I do that. I do that. But just knowing that, hey, they, whether they mean it or not, they probably do, but they expressed it, you know, they showed something other than I'm cool, I don't have to say that. And I just think that goes back to building these relationships and getting to know these kids and showing them that they're more than a test score. They are more than a grade on the report card and that they're worth something.
Totally. That's incredible. Yeah. So let's kind of shift gears towards someone who may be listening, who may be thinking teaching might be the path for them. What is some practical advice that you would give to someone that's thinking maybe inner city, maybe doing a special program or even just working with a people group that is different than them? Mm-hmm. What's kind of some advice that you would give to someone, maybe yourself a couple years ago?
I would say go in with an open mind. Go in as a servant leader, emphasis on servant, because so often many people go to these schools in this neighborhood of people, this community of people. And whether, and I know it's done out of love and out of wanting to be the hands and feet of the Lord, but it turns into, how can I as a white person help you as someone who is broke and not well represented, mm-hmm. And don't have it as good as me. Mm-hmm. And so instead of going in with that mindset, going into how can I learn from these people? How can they better me? Instead of how can I better them? And I think one of the reasons I've been able to be good at what I do. I'm a competitive person, so if I'm not good at it, I'm not going to do it. And that's just the reality of the situation. Mm-hmm. But I think one reason I'm good at what I do and I love what I do is because I have found people. I have found my people at school who I can ask to cover my classroom for 2 minutes while I go cry. I've found the people at my school who I can run to and cry, who love these kids for the same reason I love these kids. And I have found people outside of school who can love me when I can't love myself because of what's going into these kids. Mm-hmm. And I really think that goes for anything. But especially with teaching, like I have 42 students.
Whoa.
42. Yeah. I have an afternoon class and a morning class. 42 students. I see them 8 hours a day. Multiple parents have told me when they get home, they tell the kids to go to a neighbor's house. And so I probably see them more than their parents do. And it's like, you have to have people who can support you. Mm-hmm. And it's the saying, if you can't pour from an empty cup, which I'm not going to lie, I don't really like that saying because it's true, but I do it, but you do it anyways.
Right.
And I think that goes right along with, Lexi, what you're trying to do with this podcast and help people do with this podcast is like, if you're passionate about it, you're going to do it anyway, mm-hmm. because it is an act of obedience. And those people who help you love yourself when your cup is empty and help you remember that, hey, you have to be obedient today, are going to be the ones that keep you going.
Absolutely. That kind of, Sorry.
No, you're good.
I was going to say that just leads into my next question, which is kind of like, who inspires you while you're encouraging and inspiring and loving on these students?
So I was really blessed. The very first day I walked into my classroom, there's a girl, named Emily who taught right across the hall from me. And she was like, oh my gosh, you're the new teacher. I was like, yeah, I'm so pumped. And she just ran up and gave me a huge hug. She is absolutely my best friend in Chattanooga, both professionally and not professionally. And she is so inspiring because she lives in the neighborhood with these kids. She has them over every Tuesday. She's who I coach soccer with. She's more the skill coach. but she is able to pour into me, continue to encourage me and remind me why I do what I do. And then this past year, there have been a couple other new teachers who have come along, and we've all just, we found each other, and we wouldn't be able to keep doing this without one another. And it's really cool. Emily told me this quote, and she was like, look, my goal is to get in front of these students and make them want to be a teacher. And if they don't want to be a teacher, then I failed at my job, because that means I'm not having fun. They're not having fun, and it's not going to be a productive environment. And so just having, and that's just her mindset about life. She's a positive person who, does things with the joy of the Lord wholeheartedly. And she has definitely been, she's a couple years older than me, been teaching for a little bit longer. And just her honesty and her ability to be raw and encouraging has been a huge, huge, huge part of my success and my passion as a teacher, as an educator. So
that's phenomenal. So that's kind of a peer that pours into you and inspires mm-hmm. you. I'm also really big on encouraging women to have mentors. So do you have mentors or someone that in this current season kind of has gone before you? Maybe it's your mom that you talk to about this stuff, and maybe it's someone from church or the community. What does mentorship look like to you, and what impact has it had on you?
Yeah, I think definitely my mom, even though she teaches a different community than I do, teaches a different type of student than I do, she is the reason I do. She was the original reason I do what I do, and to be able to go back and see her still doing that. And I'm 1 year in, and she's, 30 years in and still doing it and still loving it, has been so affirming. And being able to just call her and say, I don't know if I can do this, Mom, or I don't know how to handle this situation. And to be able to have her words of encouragement and support, through a motherly tone, I think, and knowing that she's my mom and she's not going to sugarcoat anything, has been so extremely helpful. I grew up having the same small group teacher from 7th grade to 12th grade. And she is also a teacher. I honestly don't think we've ever talked about teaching together though. Like, I don't know what grade she teaches. She doesn't know what grade I teach. But she was somebody who originally, made me understand that, oh, it is important to have a mentor, and it is important to have somebody who's gone before you, who knows what you're going through and can love you from a place of, I've been there, and you're going to be here one day and it's going to be okay. And there's a preschool teacher at Hardy who, this is her first year at Hardy, but she's been teaching preschool forever. And the way she loves her students is just so, it's just so Jesus. And that's all I can say, because she forgives these kids. Oh, and like, they're preschoolers, so they're adorable, and it's hard not to forgive them. I don't blame her for that. But she loves these kids so purely and forgives them over and over. And is so, I don't think I've ever heard a negative word come out of her mouth. And just being able, and I don't even know, I've talked to her maybe twice, which is really cool because I just watch her. And so I wouldn't know if I would call her a mentor, but her actions are that kind of serve in that role for me. And I think it's just really cool because you don't know who's going to be watching you. You don't know what student's going to be watching. You don't know what teacher's going to be watching you. And she, it's obvious through watching her that she just does this because she loves Jesus and because she loves these kids. And so watching her do that has been so inspirational and refreshing for me on the days where I feel like I can't do that anymore.
Oh, it's amazing. I love how much emphasis you've put on community, just the way that you love your students and how you guys within your the context of your classroom, basically have like a family. And then you with the other teachers, you have like a family, and then you have your spouse who contributes to your success. And so I'm just a huge believer in doing life together. I think that our world, specifically America, just says you got to do it alone. You got to do it fast. Like and there's a quote that says, to go fast, go alone, but to go far, go together. And I just could not believe in that more, because I think that we make the most impact when we're willing to lean into each other's strengths. And that's what this podcast is all about. Like you mentioned, I just want to see women thriving. I want to see women doing what they are passionate about, seeing them doing what they feel like God's put on their heart as their calling and their purpose. And I just want to give a platform for women that are doing incredible things like yourself. So the last question, and then we'll wrap it up, is what are you looking forward to in 2019?
Oh, 2019. There's a lot that I'm looking forward to in terms of education and teaching. It's going to be in the fall, we'll start my second full year of teaching. I'm a first year teacher. And so I'm so excited to get into my second year of teaching, put in my classroom the things that I've learned from the last year, and do a lot of things differently. But kind of, it's funny because January is the new year, new me for society, but August is that for a teacher. You know, new me, new year, new classroom. So I'm really excited to be able to see what everything that I've learned and everything I've done kind of redone. And but also, because I teach fifth grade, my kids get promoted, and it's a huge deal for these kids to get promoted up to sixth grade. And unfortunately, I'm going to miss the last month of school because I'll be out on maternity leave, but I will come back for promotion. And it's going to be a tearful mess for me, I know. And I hear people say it all the time, you never forget your first group of students. And so to just see where we started in August and see where we're going to be ending in May, I am just so, so excited to celebrate that with them and to celebrate their successes and their growth in the year that we were able to have together. That's then 2019, incredible. Excited for baby boy to come along.
So yay!
It'll be a big month right in there for a promotion for my kids and birth of the baby.
Oh, that is so sweet. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been so great to get to know your heart and just kind of share this with the world and hopefully inspire future teachers to come and really, even if someone isn't a teacher, that they would just open their eyes and open their heart to some of the needs that are in our own backyard, in our community, and hopefully just get the wheels turning on how we can be the hands and feet of Jesus. So thanks, Rach.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, ladies, you are infinitely valuable. You were created with a set of gifts, skills, and talents that you have and only you have, created by God for his glory and for you to live out your purpose. So go and be his hands and feet to this broken world. Have a beautiful day. Get it, girl. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day. If this message has encouraged you, then please click to subscribe and share with a friend who may be inspired by the message. Also, if you have an event coming up and you're looking for a speaker, click the link below to get in touch with me.